The reason for doing this is just to address the issues of GTA Online people like to sort of riot.
Then I think it's probably like a good idea to try and establish like some of the fair criticisms first. So, like,
yeah, we can do. Go for it then.
To just to give some context. So I think like first and foremost, like, the whole argument that you need people to play with is a perfectly legitimate thing to say, because, you know, as in most sort of multiplayer games, that is true. You do need a community of people to actually rely on to kind of bounce ideas off in order to actually get yourself going. Especially, you need somebody who's actually played before to try and get the most out of it, which is where I think a lot of people do tend to sort of trip up.
I wouldn't say that you're incorrect by saying that. I would say that, like, we've been playing since, what, beginning of August. We've literally been playing every night for the last, what, was it now, 3 months?
Yeah, pretty much.
And and before that, it was very random. Like, you'd have a few times of people would join and they'd join you. And it's as with all multiplayer games, it's more fun when you've got more people online. But I've spent a lot of my 28 days of playing GTA Online on my own in that time. I spent so much time just playing it as a single player, doing contact missions and going from one to the next and just playing that game. But I do realize that, looking back on it now, that when you look at that, you know, I was only playing a tiny percentage of the content that's in
yeah
there. And obviously we've experimented far more when you've got more people on, because it's easier to try that stuff. Obviously, going into races on your own is going to lead to frustration more than anything else. And I think that leads into one of the other sort of criticisms that the game's got, which is people often say how they get stuck in lobbies and they're waiting. Mm-hmm. And it's not an incorrect thing to say about the game, but I think it's mitigated. There are ways to get around it, and there are things that you can do to circumvent that stuff. And I think a lot of it comes to, and as I said, if I have one major criticism of the game, and I can't remember if I brought this up on the actual podcast or not, which was that the game does a shit job of trying to tell you that, of tutorials in terms of telling you this stuff. You can find tutorial stuff on the website, but like I said, the website's, you know, you've got to go online and you've got to look at the website to see that stuff, and to my mind, that stuff should always be in the game, because if you're playing, I mean, you're still breaking the experience because you've got to go and check a tutorial or something, but you want to have easier access to that. But, and I think in a lot of ways that stuff is quite difficult in the game if you don't know where to go or what to look for. But once you do, it's all there at your fingertips. Like, there's, you know, ways of getting around the lobby system and stuff. And, yeah.
But I think there is almost like a barrier for entry from the point that you begin the game as well, because it staggers the way in which you interact with certain types of features online. So when you start off as part of your introduction, I mean, I did this three years ago, pretty much. You've got your races and your death matches, and then you have to accrue a certain amount of experience and levels in order to actually reach that point. Yeah. And I wonder to what extent that influences how people interact with the game, or how much longevity they're able to find in the game in and of itself because of that. Because realistically, if you're knocking about in a group of people who are level 100 plus, you do have access vicariously to much of the content through those players.
Yeah. And even more so now, I mean, even, you know, depending on what you're playing, it's things like the CEOs, the Adventures in Finance and Felony, is to give it its correct term, but that pack added the, you know, if you become an associate for a CEO, then you've got access to vehicles that you wouldn't, unless you've spent a couple of million of in-game currency, you don't have access to normally.
But I mean, historically, you would find yourself in a situation where if you wanted to get the most out of the content, you would realistically have to spend a lot of time sitting in lobbies trying to wait for games to like populate. And that's probably
what
criticism's kind of founded from, rather than actually what you might experience if you were to play the game of today.
Yeah, I think we'll have all done the lobby stuff. And I mean, it became, the only time it really becomes a problem is within the heist side of that stuff. That's where it's become, and it's still to this day an issue. And it's not an excuse to get away from that. But to me, don't play the heist with anybody other than your friends is the only advice I can give to that anyway. It's the only way I would ever want to play the heists on the whole, except for maybe the first one, which is only a two-player one, which is often the easiest to do anyway. So
the idea that you might need to actually find a specific location on the map in order to initiate a certain mission is kind of false. Like, in no way is it ever, like that.
You can do that, but that's the long-winded, unnecessary way to do it.
And not only that, if you feel that that's the way to do it, you do have to contend with all of the sort of like really aggressive behavior of other players in a public server. So it's an exercise in frustration rather than one in sort of actually how to play the game.
I've got two problems with that in the sense that you don't have to be on the public server to see that stuff. So that stuff isn't relegated to public only game mode. So you can be, as I've said before, if you don't want to get trolled by other players, don't go in a public server. And so I've often wondered how, when people say that this is why they don't want to play because it's a nightmare, they go in and within seconds they're getting shot. That happens, but I'm also curious about how they go about getting into online. I think I did discuss this on the podcast, which was, you know, go into the single player first and then access the online menu from the options. And then the bottom option is play GTA Online. Now, when you click that within the options, you get this other sub-menu, gives you the list of what you want to do. So invite only, friends only, solo, crew only, you know, all those, you know, what's it, like half a dozen variations, which are basically mean that you're not going to have any problems from members, you know, from random members of the public playing the game.
Yeah, but to pick up on what Rich was saying earlier, as in terms of a fair criticism of the game, that's not very obvious. Other than, as you say, loading up the game into single player mode, and that doesn't feel like a natural thing to do turning your game on to play online. You want to go online, and for me, those options should be easily accessible. You know, when you're going directly into online.
Yeah, I mean, that was the way that
minor.
I found... Well, it isn't. I think that because I've still got issue with this, which is when the game first loads, you see the option at the bottom appear online, press square, and that will take you directly, as the game is first on its initial loading, it will go into the online side of things straight away and forego the single player. And the problem with that is it will take you straight into a public server. Now, the problem I have with that is that you can't easily access a friends-only server. You can't set up a friends-only server from that point. You have to exit the game and go back into the single player and come in again, this time setting up as a friends-only system. Yeah. I think that is a problem. It would be a lot easier if you could do it. They went some way to circumvent that aspect of the game by bringing up passive mode. So you have this ability to become invincible. You can't draw weapons in that mode, but
you can't even access the weapons wheel.
So you're kind of, but you're safe in that, and it gives you leeway to get out of that and to find whatever you want to do. I don't know why, in a way, why you do that. I would just leave and find another server. But I think the idea that you spend all the time in the lobbies it was a criticism a year ago. It's not a criticism anymore.
Yeah.
Like, because I mean, we'll get into this as we talk about sort of the more recent. I say it's more recent. I mean, we're talking about the Finance and Felony, which came out in June. And from that point forward, the lobby screens have kind of withered away and died. Like, when we play, like we said last night, there's one loading screen, and that is when you initially load the game up. And that's it. And from that point to the point where we log off at the end of the night, there are no more loading lobbies. We're not waiting. We're just literally going from one job to the next. We bounce between the CEO stuff to the biker stuff and back again, or we do the business stuff, you know, with the weed farms or whatever. And it's seamless. Like, we don't break. We just keep playing all night. And it's, you know, so I've got issue when people are saying that they, you know, you go on two or 3 hours, and you're spending half of that time in lobbies. Not the case. And even if you're picking jobs from the job options, because that's the other thing, so we didn't touch upon that. If people are looking for specific jobs online, the very first option in your online menu, if you put the options button, is jobs. From that option, you have access to every single job in the game. So if you're looking for something specific, there it is. And you just cycle through. You're looking for death matches or a race or whatever. There it is. Go from there. You're straight in. You don't have to go to any part on the map to find this stuff. It's just there for you to log into. Now, you're going to go into a lobby screen with races and all that sort of stuff. It's natural. It's easier now than it's ever been because now you've all, there's one option. I can't remember if this has been added. I'm pretty certain it got added with the remaster on the PS4, which is the invite party members. So if you're in a party chat and you've got a private party going, you can invite everybody who's playing the game on that within that party just by pressing that option. And, you know, that stuff feels really easy now, really intuitive. It's not a problem. If you want members of the public to fill out that game, then of course you're going to have to wait. But in some ways, it depends. Because they do all these, so every week they're running these special jobs at 1.5 extra RP and cash. Those are pretty populated. You should not have any problems joining those games. They often, you go in and they're full. You know, and you just within moments they're you know, they're packed full of people and off you go.
I think there's one aspect of it that I'm interested in, and that's trying to identify like what purpose a public server had prior to the finance and felony and the biker DLC. Like what was there to do in a public server? And I think traditionally the public server was the multiplayer online game. So I think in the original GTA 4, where it sort of gained some momentum, you had like a handful of missions, and certainly in Red Dead Redemption, it had the same features, and your multiplayer game was the online, the world, and just chaos in between. And you had to sort of migrate towards that, the like key missions that you found in there, actually find some structure into it. And that's like, we touched on it just there, the way that Rockstar actually sort of addressed how the public server is used and its function and its sort of like main purpose has actually sort of evolved over time and changed that. So like a great example is the CEO and the biker missions actually totally evolve how you interact with the world and what purpose those areas have in that sense. So personally, like when we're playing at this point, there is no need to spend any time in any kind of lobbies at all. And I think if you are doing it like that, it shows like a fundamental misunderstanding of actually how the game works.
Well, I think that is often the criticism as well. I mean, that is my criticism towards people criticizing the game off, because it's like, it is. And this applies to all multiplayer games, unless somebody, you know, because you're kind of thrown into the thick of it with all games that play with other people, you don't necessarily have time to peruse sort of menus and options and stuff. You literally, it's like straight into it, aren't you? So even like Battlefield and multiplayer shooters, you're kind of, it takes time to acclimatise to all the options that are available to you. And I think, you know, GTA is probably denser than most games with that stuff. Like, there's a lot of options. There are lots of things that the game simply doesn't tell you to do. And, you know, it's difficult. I mean, is it like, because like Chris, I'm kind of interested for your perspective with this, because like you came into this quite recently, didn't you? So you started playing with us and you were literally like level 4 or something. It was like, you know, so I'm kind of interested in your perspective on like what it is now that's sort of drawn you back into the game.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, it's been a hell of a lot of fun, to be honest with you. I mean, my previous experiences with GTA Online, were on the Xbox on GTA 4. And a bit like what Rich was saying just before, there was very little structure to what we used to do. Yeah. We would literally just go on, you know, someone would nick a helicopter and we'd, you know, we'd just blast each other until there was no one left standing, and then we'd do it again and do it again. But the stuff that's, I mean, you know, that is in GTA 5, but yeah. The stuff that keeps you coming back is, is the sheer variety of jobs and different mm-hmm. missions and whatnot that you can do. And I don't feel like I've even scratched the surface with it. As someone who, you know, I mean, I don't get to play every night, but, you know, I play when I can. And I feel like I'm doing different things pretty much every time we play. I mean, that first sort of big night that we had, and we did a couple of the missions, and one of them was where we had to kind of split up and, you know, steal a plane and stuff like that. And I remember, you know, trying to avoid crashing the plane into the mountains and stuff. And I mean, it was ridiculous. And I've not done it since. and I've played the game so many times since then. And that kind of, you know, screams out, you know, just the variety in the game. And I think the user created stuff is fantastic as well. I mean, it certainly isn't spelled out to you that it's there initially. I do rely heavily on you guys kind of pointing me in the right direction in terms of these game modes. But when you know, I mean, once you play them, I mean, that, you know, that clown mode that we played, and the
Cholerophobia.
And that's, you know, the Terminator 2 mode. I mean, these are just, I mean, we have so much fun with them. And then you've got cutting stunts, you know, crazy races, and ridiculous.
I think it's worth cutting that open and exploring that as well, and just really kind of isolating what it is that GTA Online is, because I think there's like a misconception about the actual things that you can do in there. So for anyone who is a lapsed player, or they haven't spent any real like meaningful time actually trying to investigate what the updates are, it's easy to see that you might think that it's just a sandbox where you can just have a piece of anarchy, some races, some death matches, some of the horde modes, and then that's it. But since the game's actually been brought out, the way that they've manipulated the gameplay and massaged players into certain types of game modes, it's actually become much more expansive experience.
What they've done, like you say, they've massaged players into actually more structured gameplay, and I think they've done it in really smart ways.
Because let's not like disguise the fact that, you know, realistically, just going online and harassing people probably is, for many people, the way that they want to play. It's a perfectly legitimate way to spend your time in GTA. You know, you can earn experience and money simply by doing that. You're probably likely to lose more money than you are to earn, but it's still legitimate.
Yeah, no, I think it is definitely a breeding ground for that type of player. I mean, luckily, it's not something that you have to put up with. I mean, you can come away from the public servers. You can, you can do things to, you know, to mitigate it. But I mean, I've certainly come across, you know, times when I've come out of my garage, in my flat, and I've literally had people waiting purely to blow me up the minute I come out, for no reason, just obviously to annoy me.
They can pretty much.
You know, other occasions, certainly in the races, in the cunning stunts races, where I've seen, you know, large scale races where a couple, you know, several other races on the track, you know, their first action is to just turn around and start trying to ram people, and it's like the race hasn't even fully kicked off, and then they spend their time just kind of going around the track backwards, trying to knock people off. And I mean, that's, you know, but fair enough. That's like fun for them. Like,
no, I and they are things that happen every day. But
yeah,
I found, like, I can't remember, like, I rarely ever get trolled by other players, and it's not because I'm overpowered, I've got more levels, because I'm not. I mean, I'm quite high level, but it's like ridiculous what some of these people have got on their game. But the difference is that I know how to get around that stuff. I know how to avoid it. And I think that's the problem, is like a lot of people don't. You know, it's like we have to play, well, half the biker missions can be done in a friends-only server. So we've done that quite often. But the good stuff, the real, like, the big missions, the stuff that is really, you know, high earning, if you will, if you're after the cash for the game, that stuff has to be done on public servers, as does the CEO stuff. But yeah. Again, it's like, you know, there are ways to get around that. I mean, the easiest thing that we've been doing is so when you go into a public server, you click your option screen and you drop down to where it says find new session. And literally all we have to do to sort of get around the issue of other players is just find another session. And it depends on how busy the game is. Like if you pick a Friday or a Saturday night, you might have to do this more times. But, you know, the norm...
The success rate speaks for itself, really, doesn't it? Like, norm it isn't that difficult to do.
Yeah, three or four times. And on the fourth occasion, we found a server where it's just us. Like, usually it's just the host initially, and then you invite your friends into that game, and then you've got access to everything in terms of the mission structure, the stuff that has to be done on a public server. You are on a public server. Mm. You may very well have random members join that game, but we've never come across that in particular to any degree that it's been a problem.
No, and I would certainly say that although I've experienced some of the trolls, you know, having a go, it's never ruined my evening. It's never made me want to turn my PS4 off.
No.
I mean, like, I'm probably jumping ahead here, but realistically, what Rockstar have done is they've introduced game modes which allow you to sort of not just circumnavigate the problem, but actually address it. You can bring these people into your motorbike gang. And, you know, the success rate of actually people joining is relatively high, because realistically it's incredibly lucrative. Mm. It's also much more sort of beneficial for everybody involved to join that. I mean, it's discretionary, of course, but at the same time, like, that's part of the way that they've actually not just mitigated it, but addressed it and just tried to gently persuade players to come together.
I've done this on random games. Occasionally I join in during the day and you just put the invite out. You know, and there might be sort of like six people online and maybe two of them join. But those two have joined, that's it. Suddenly we're the biggest gang on that server. So, you know, who's going to start? And even if they do, I mean, like I said, when you join either a corporation or a biker gang, you know, you've got the friendly fire is, well, that's an option you can turn off if you choose to. But we've always got it turned on if you choose to. We've always, by default, it's turned off. So those team members cannot kill each other. So that kind of, you know, it helps. Well, it helps, period. It means you're not like, you know, even when we're smacking each other off the bikes, there's no real damage done, you know, and it's just.
I think, like, realistically, because, like, I was guilty of this.
Mm.
Like, my feeling is that for a lot of people, things like Connor Stunts and the Heist DLC that they put out, content that they put out rather, seems to be in their mind the pinnacle of what GTA has to offer. So in the Connor Stunts, you've got this really focused racing, which is like across like crazy physics in servers with like 16 other racers. So it is inherently fun and it's real sort of quick way to sort of experience it. And then with the Heist, you've got the sort of scripted nature with the mocap and the acting and the sort of cynicism and satire that GTA is famous for. But I think in moving away from that, they've actually addressed a lot more of the fundamental issues in the game in and of itself to make it a much more pleasant experience for people actually playing GTA Online. So I guess in my opinion, while the Heists are fun, and there is a legitimate way to earn a lot of money really quickly, it's definitely not the pinnacle of what GTA has to offer. It's not the future of what GTA really should be offering as an online game.
No, I mean, when you talk about the future of GTA or what Rockstar are planning with their online, I think we're seeing that. We're only just seeing that now with the finance and felony and the biker packs, because I think that's where it's changed the game. It's fundamentally different now where, you know, like I said, there's no lobbying. There's no separating from the online world to go into a lobby screen to wait for other people to join.
Yeah.
There's none of that.
And just to flesh that out. Fleshing that out, I mean, I guess the most pervasive experience for people who are actually playing the Heists, certainly if you're trying to get a pickup group to do it, is spending inordinate amounts of time waiting in a lobby for people who may or may not join, who would typically leave, then crossing your fingers as you go into a cutscene that people are going to come, and then having to go through the rigmarole of actually trying to get the mission done in and of itself. Yeah. And as you're probably like well aware, most of the missions to do that, unless you're sitting on comms and you have a bit of patience with one another, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's just kind of like take that apart. Like, what in what way have Rockstar actually addressed some of those problems within the like heists that were pervasive in the heists, and then in some of the actual like vanilla missions in the CEO and the biker update? And I think first and foremost is like the clever introduction of mechanics that put into the game, which actually bring back or reward players for actually communicating, and not just communicating on comms, but communicating in through the game. So, I mean, just to take it from the CEO, you've got shared, we touched on this before, you've got a shared sort of arsenal of weaponry and a shared garage of equipment and vehicles that you can pool on. So, you know, even if you're a level one character, if you're teaming with somebody who's level 50, you still have access to the same weaponry and equipment. So you can legitimately pick up a helicopter with a rocket launcher on there just to give yourself a bit of a boost at that point. And that has to have been a problem prior to that, because you would have people who were turned off by the game. I think I wrote about it in that you, at the point that that came out, you had players who had 2.5 years to amass an arsenal and a bank account, which were going to make it impossible for people to actually progress through that game.
Mm. No, I'd say that's legit.
A big thing as well is, you know, that ties into that. You look at other online multiplayer games. So, you know, the biggest example for me this generation being Destiny. Mm. The entry point for that game is quite a bit. It's quite a bit behind where people are going to be spending the majority of their time when they've been playing it for 100, 200, 300 plus hours. So getting yourself up to raid level in Destiny takes an awful long time. Whereas my experience with you guys, where obviously you've already had this time to learn the game, discover all these fun missions and whatnot. I mean, the time that it took from me just logging on to just getting right in the mix with you guys and not feeling like I'm some underpowered thing in the corner that you know effectively can't participate. It hasn't been like that at all. I mean, I don't know how many hundreds of levels there are between us, but it certainly never feels like that when we're playing these missions.
I think you're right, and like just to put that like into some kind of legitimate tangible figure, it sort of bleeds into another of the main common criticisms about GTA for my money, which is that everything costs too much. And I think that's like not just a personal grievance that I have with it. I just think it's absolutely false, like fundamentally false. Yeah. Because what it implies is that everything is beyond your reach and that you're being constantly harassed by Rockstar to actually nickel and dime you for shark cards. And that couldn't be further from the truth. So like just to put it into perspective, when we're playing, yes, we do have existing knowledge of the game, but we are perfectly capable of earning upwards of like $100,000 every night, not through like gaming the game or breaking the game, but just playing legitimately, you know?
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. I mean, like last night I came out with 170,000 by the end of the night, and we were literally just mucking around doing what we normally do, which is just missions. We just happened to be on a bit, what was it, an hour longer than normal, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, so what is the, I think it can be a problem if you're just scratching the surface. So if you're just wandering around in an open public server and getting shot repeatedly and occasionally coming across a race mission and getting a couple of thousand because you came fourth or whatever, you participated, then I can imagine you are going to be sitting there at the end of the night saying, I've spent 3 hours playing this game and I've got, like 12 grand. Like what the hell, you know, that I can buy a t-shirt. And it's like,
so I guess with that in mind, would you say that it was a fair criticism that Rockstar don't do enough to actually explain to players what their new content is. Like, you know, with the biker DLC, for example, are they actually giving players enough of actual, like a peek between the curtains to get an idea of how to do it? Because I'm not convinced that that's the truth.
No, I'm not. I don't mean it in that sense, because I think they do enough. So whenever they've got currently a game mode that's enhanced, so they cycle through various things. If they add a new game mode, then that's usually the one that's like double XP, double money. And that's always the first, that's always prioritized. So you will have options at the bottom when you're loading in for, you know, to access, I think it's like press triangle and it will take you into the latest whatever mode that's on offer this week. And so you can play that stuff. And then there's all the newswire screens that come up with all their information and stuff. So they're telling you this stuff. I think you can, you like, my criticism in terms of tutorials is it doesn't tell you how to find stuff. It doesn't explain the menus and that side of it.
Yeah.
And that's,
and these are some of the most impenetrable esoteric menus that,
oh yeah,
that, I mean, there absolutely, yeah, is. Yeah.
Like, you have, you know, you've got a lot of stuff in there, and I think that's where I have find fault
with. I think the they actually do have like mechanics in place in within the game that isn't just blurb written on a menu. Like, I cannot go 30 seconds when I log on without Long John Teabag rigging me up and asking me to go and get a place and go and start a biker gang, or another character saying, look, you need to deliver this particular piece of equipment to me, or you have Brucey who's trying to sell you bull shark testosterone, all sorts of things. I don't think it's a fair criticism for people to come in and go, I don't know how to play the new content, because it is like just pushed in your face almost relentlessly. Yeah.
And I don't hear anybody, I mean, you talk about earning potential. So when people moan about money and stuff, you've got the daily objectives as well.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that stuff should be brought up on your phone a little more. You do get part of, well, you get, it's kind of weird because you're not just getting phone, you get phone call off Simeon all the time as well, but you get text message off Simeon as soon as you log in and he'll be saying, can you find me these three cars? Now, admittedly, that's a little tricky. You know, you've got to sort of identify the cars, which you can use Leicester for, but, you know, you've got all that kind of stuff. But you've got the daily objectives every day as well. So there's all these little sort of nuggets of things that Rockstar have put in there to kind of open your eyes to all the different modes, because the daily objectives change. So everybody will have a slightly different one. So it might be play one deathmatch. And there'll be three of these in little tick box. So you play one deathmatch, blow up 20 cars, and call a mugger on somebody. Yeah. And you do that. If you break all three of them, then you get 25,000 then and there. That's the reward. And if you do that every day for a week, you get 100,000. You do it every day for a month, you get 1,000,000. Now, even I didn't know that. I knew you got a reward and I knew you got 25 grand, but I didn't know it was in tiers. So the more you do it, the greater the reward. But I think those are interesting elements as well, because Destiny did exactly the same thing. It would have these daily objectives, and it's a way of kind of making you kind of go off, you sort of go off the map, so to speak, and play, break your own kind of routine with this stuff, because every day it's trying to push you into doing something else. And I think it's interesting. Those kind of things are interesting, because they, you know, you might play a mode that you've never bothered with before, and suddenly you think, actually, this is really good. So you go back into it and start playing it more regularly. And I think, you know, those things are interesting.
Yeah, that was a big one in the Crucible mode on Destiny, with the, you know, the multiplayer, where it would push you into different game modes and give you sort of rewards regardless of how you did based on that. But to sort of draw on that comparison again, with Destiny, I felt like it was a much higher focus on, you know, you need loot, you need all this stuff to, you know, in order to enhance your enjoyment of the game. And I would play that game with the aim of getting my next gun, but it was completely random and incredibly frustrating, you know, the whole kind of engram process and whatnot. And I can honestly say with GTA, I know specifically what gear I want, what car I want, what weapon I want. I know how much money I've got to win to get it, and then I'm away. And but I don't feel that it's a game that, you know, that it's a game that you need to make money every time you play it. I mean, sometimes I jump home with you guys, and I'm sure I make $3,000 or $4,000, and I don't even remember to bank it, because that's not the primary reason that I'm playing which has been with other games where, you know, loot is such, you know, I mean, there was times I would come off Destiny, and it's partly because of, you know, just getting frankly bored of the content. And I'd be like, oh, well, I got nothing out of that. And because of that, I would have a memory that I'd had a shit night's gaming. Whereas with GTA, I don't get that at all. I can earn very little, or I can earn a lot, and I don't feel like it changes my enjoyment level. So the whole money thing just isn't even a factor for me, to be honest.
I think the fact that it's, as a game, like self-aware of its own versatility is perhaps its biggest strength in that sense. So, like, we were discussing the other night about when you are performing some of the actual functions in the new content. So to give you an example, you're selling your factory full of weed and you have to make the sale. It's not the same game every time you play it. It changes it up with new different tweaks and balances every single time to actually offer you a completely different experience. So some context. In one, you may be taking a singular truck of goods and you have to make deliveries while it's continually pouring enemies in your way. In a second example of the exact same mission, you might be doing airdrops with a police helicopter chasing you and you have to try and make it avoid it, or something as simple as you have to fly below a certain level on the ground so that you don't get picked up by enemy radar, things like that. It's continually sort of adjusting the way in which you do these things to try and keep the experience fresh.
There's
a couple of other things that GTA Online does, and this is something that I think it's like quite delicate to touch into, but like, especially on your podcast, for example, there's a lot of criticism leveled at the way that Rockstar handle, like, the representation of females or sort of really cynical narrative structures, certainly with the scene of the torture.
Yeah.
And I feel really strongly that this is something which is not it's not representative of GTA Online. And the two have completely different focuses. And I find that a lot of people are quick to criticize GTA and they don't want to support, like, a medium or a piece of like software like GTA, which promotes that kind of behavior, yet they don't factor in that this is just something which is not prevalent or not as prevalent in GTA Online. And I feel really strongly that as a character on GTA Online, you are mute. You are essentially androgynous. Like, nobody treats you any differently. Like, you're not sexually motivated unless you're inclined to be like that, but that's on you and not the game.
Yeah.
And then also, like, you know, there is like a parity between people. Like, what you're doing is entirely dependent on how you want to do it rather than the way the game encourages you to actually interact with it in and of itself.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, I just think it's worth anyone who might feel inclined to sort of not play GTA or not support GTA because of that to really reconsider your position on how you feel about it, because there's a really robust game behind there, a really like versatile game that you're really missing out on because you have, well, may or may not have hang-ups on the actual content in the single player.
Like, part of the reason we're recording this conversation is because well, part of it is that we want other, like, if anybody out there is listening to this and want, is getting tempted, I mean, admittedly, as long as you're on the PS4, because if you're not, I don't care. If you're not on one, if you're on one of the other platforms, I'm not interested. But, you know, is join us. I mean, join us for a game. It's like, you know, and because we've had a few people come in since the podcast and either spurred on by the way the enthusiasm for the online section, and maybe they weren't writing it off completely, but and were aware that they hadn't spent that much time in it, and there were other people playing it, so it's the best time to try it. Let's have a go. Bang! All of a sudden, holy crap! You know, this is actually really good fun, and that's and it's like it, I like that. I like the fact that people are, even if it's, you know, that only now they're discovering this three-year-old game. And that's kind of doing it a disservice. It may, in its core form, it's 3 years old. But they've like, literally added stuff like 2 weeks ago. You know, it's just, there's more stuff. And, you know, they haven't finished with this game yet. So it's like...
No, it's constantly evolving. And, I mean, another thing to draw on from my experience, I remember telling you guys this when I started playing with you. When I first got GDA, it was pretty much back when I first got my PS4, and right. the game, apart from playing the majority of the single player campaign, it pretty much sat in the back of my collection, never really sort of coming out. I'd have a blast on it now and again. But I had no idea, absolutely no idea whatsoever, what a gem I had sitting under the TV. And it took me to get completely, bored with the other games that I was into to start looking around and thinking, well, what can I play? I'm looking at the other games my friends are picking up and just not interested. And then, saw some of the coverage on Kin and Rince, for this game, and thought, oh, I'll jump on and have a blast. And now it's literally the only game I play on my PS4.
I have the exact same experience. Yeah, and I mean, like, I can't see it going away. I can't see myself like becoming bored of the gameplay, and that's not because it's so compelling that like I have to go online every night. And I think, you know, you could probably level like some sort of criticism at me saying like, you know, I have an addictive personality, or I find comfort in playing the same game over and over again. It's not that. Fundamentally, it's because this game has such versatility and such creativity behind it that actually the amount of content that I've touched in my, I mean, I'm looking at the Rockstar career online here. 11 days, 7 hours and 58 minutes. I have barely scratched the surface of the amount of gameplay that's available here. Not just the gameplay which is published by Rockstar directly, but here's a game where they've made user-created content that I do not have the time to get everything that's done there. Yeah. And the amount of just absolutely genius things that people have been able to do with this sandbox is just outstanding. You know?
Exactly. I mean,
look at that. With the user created content, it's always been something that console gamers have kind of cried out for. When looking across the pond at how things are done on PC, how you've got these games with different mods and whatnot, and how it's extended the life of games, and we've got that big time with GDA. More so than most other games, I would say.
I mean, it's interesting because, like, we probably about a month ago now, isn't it? Well, we decided to really sort of break the routine and have a look at some of the other modes that were there, and that's where we came across the one called Hasta La Vista, which is on paper, it's a really simple premise, but I have literally been belly laughing while playing this game. It is. And to be honest, I get belly laughs almost at least every night. There's a point in the during the course of play where you get the emergent moment thing. And like I said, I think I said this last night, it can be as simple as somebody tearing off in front of me on a motorbike and then ploughing straight into a bus or something. And I just see that happen. It cracks me up because, you know, you're talking to the person as they're driving and they weren't paying attention and bang.
Yeah.
It's slapstick. Yeah. But there's so much of that kind of stuff. But the Hasta La Vista mode is almost a mode designed to do precisely that. But it's simple. Like, I'll give it some context. So Hasta La Vista is a four-player game type where you're on a stretcher road. And there's two players are on push bikes, and the other two are in the big, like, trucks, you know, and the objective is simple. The guys in the trucks have to run over the guys on the bikes, and it's so simple, it's scary how effective it is in terms of when you're playing it. I have literally, you're literally screaming you're pounding, like, if you're on the bikes, you're pounding the button to pedal faster, and you can hear the big behind you. You just like the sensation of like heart in mouth and stuff. And it's fantastic. And this is one mode out of possibly what? I have no idea how many game types there are. There's literally like hundreds of the damn things. If you include the user created content, there's so much. And
So, I mean, they're the structured game modes that are, like, really impressive because there's just such simplicity in it. But for every structured piece of content that you've got, you have those emergent moments that you're talking about. Yeah. So we were playing the other night. We were doing a mission where we had to escort a hearse to, a funeral home or maybe, like, a crematorium.
Yeah, I remember.
And it just ended in, like, a 10-player fist fight. Between everybody who's playing it.
And it was completely organic, wasn't it? It started out of nothing, and
one person punched another person. Yeah.
Well, the reason that became funny was because we were part of the same biker gang. So being that, then it meant that we couldn't kill one another. So you can literally wade in with machetes and battle axes, and petrol bombs, and it was just. Yeah, it's just chaos, and I've actually got. I do have footage, so at some point this week I'll put it up. But
yeah, I think so.
That was incredible. That
but really that happens every night. Every night we're playing. There's always been these moments that just have us in hysterics, you know. And it's just this is like it's one of the it is one of the major pulls for the game is because you never know how things are going to play out.
Well, there was the other mission that we did that was in a similar vein to that, where we ended up at a strip club. And how bizarre was it to be just standing around with all these strippers with massive machine guns? And I remember going inside the club as well, and there's still a couple of them pole dancing. And,
oh, the strippers, because that was the same. It was the same mission, base mission, which was protect these limousines. But inside the limousines were the strippers rather than the funeral home.
And they
all got out with machine guns. So it wasn't that we weren't the one. Well, we were all standing around with machine guns as well, but so were the strippers coming out. And it was just this, like, everybody's got this standoff and we're all waiting for all these enemies to come in, but we'd already, like, literally wiped the floor with them on the way in. And but it's like...
it was one of those, missions and moments where I would just stop and just look at the scene around us and just think, this is really, really bizarre, but absolutely amazing.
Well, it is, especially when somebody's running around in a pair of silk pajamas as well, or
some short shorts with a raccoon mask. Yeah.
And it's just, there's all these sort of elements. Like, there isn't another game on the market like it, really. I mean, it's just nothing. And it's one of those things where I think, I will challenge anyone out there who has grievance with the game or thinks the game is terrible, spend an evening playing with us and we'll show you how the game works for us. And I'd be interested. I'm not saying I will guarantee that I will change your mind, but at least try to open your eyes to what the game actually has to offer rather than possibly the very sort of blinkered perspective on that stuff. And I do think people do have a blinkered point of view on it. There's no good thinking that it's the same game it was like 18 months ago when you popped on for half an hour and did, and got trolled by other players. It's not that game anymore. It hasn't been for quite some time.
No, but it does. It does take you to jump on and give it a proper go, because, like I say, that was kind of how I was with it. I always just thought, I've got access to GTA Online, but it's probably something I'm not going to be that interested in. So I didn't really bother giving it a go until.
I think all games have this. This essence of being shown by more experienced players applies to all games. I mean, I've played Battlefield, and you go around, and the experience changes when you're hanging around with an experienced squad, and ones who point you out the best points on the map and point out doorways. You got to watch that one there, or do this, and. You that's how you learn. You play with more experienced players. You see how they do things, and that opens the game up. And, without that, all games have this. It's just that I think GTA is a little, as I said earlier, it's a little more denser than most titles out there. And I think, there's a lot more to sort of peel back before you see this stuff. And you need other players to show you these days.
And not only that, I think there's a case to be made for the fact that every single piece of content they've put out is absolutely free and you're under no obligation. Well, no, I would say that not only are you not under any obligation to part with any real world money, it is simply not prevalent in the game in and of itself. You know, you've really got to try hard to find the means to actually part with your hard earned money to get in game cash.
I've not once come across something where I've thought, oh, I'm going to have to get my wallet out.
I can only envisage one situation in which it becomes an issue. If you want to buy something for which you don't have the funds to do so, and I mean, like, you know, spend 3 or 4 nights and you likely probably would be able to earn the money to do that, you know. And so with that in mind, I kind of have a real fundamental problem with anybody who feels like the fact that they've had such immeasurable success with these shark card transactions, like, is it 500 million they've earned?
Along those lines, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, that's not an indictment of the fact that they're cleverly nickel and diamond players. It's an indictment more so that the quality of the game that they've put out means that people are wanting to actually part with their money in support of it. And so, like, you know, with the recent sort of reveal of Red Dead Redemption Online and this whole idea that they're only doing it because it's so profitable. No, I don't have any kind of truck with that. I don't think it's legitimate. Yeah. Like, point to make.
Yeah,
you've got here a product which is of such quality that the reason that they're carrying it on is because they have developed holistically a community of people who actually play it consistently because it's of that great quality.
Yeah, no, I'd agree, and I think when you know if we're gonna, you know, like we live it in an age now where a game like Destiny charges around 150 quid for the experience. You know, for everything they've released, the whole thing is £150. And it's like, you know, I got this version of the game when I bought the console. So in a way, it feels like I didn't really pay anything for it. I got it as part of a bundle. And I've never stopped playing it. And, I genuinely hope that more developers take notice of what Rockstar did, and I wish more would follow their business model.
Right.
Because I think it's, you know, it encourages you to keep playing. You know, every update, it's like, we can't, you know, it's got to the stage where I was so looking forward to the bike stuff and I've not been disappointed.
I just think that, you know, like, it's an exciting prospect, and Rockstar should be held up as a sort of, like, a, you know, an institution that's actually successfully managed to do something and make it really profitable. Because, you know, from the very beginning, they've segregated GTA Online from GTA 5 and have maintained that it is a completely separate product. And the fact that it is now barely recognizable from its original iteration just goes to show that they really did have commitment to that product.
I mean, it's a testament to the longevity of the game that, I mean, it was number one again recently in the old format charts, which is, you know, as you say, for a 3-year-old game is just crazy.
Unheard of, basically.
You know, it keeps its value as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. The amount of times I've nearly sold it, but, you know, something's kind of you know, stopped me from doing it, thankfully. I've nearly, you know, traded it in. On numerous occasions, you know, to get another game, because I mean, I think you can probably still get about 35 quid for it.
Sounds about right, man. I did kind of want to, like, just sort of address the idea that, like, this is something that is a positive experience for what Rockstar want to offer as Red Dead Redemption Online itself. Like, I think, like, what they've done is they've evolved GTA 5 in such a way that at launch, Red Dead Redemption Online has so much existing experience to draw on to make a really robust game. So you've got all of the sort of scripted narrative, like, of the heists. You've got the creativity of things like cunning stunts. Obviously, that's not likely to be in Red Dead Redemption Online. But you've got the sort of way that Rockstar managed to get a more nuanced approach to bring players together, which is a problem that they had with GTA 4, GTA 5 at launch, and Red Dead Redemption Online. just the constant trolling. And I think really they've learned lessons here and just sculpted their products in such a way that it's something that we really look forward to the extent, and I know that I'm not alone with this, that I can personally see that this model of game is the future for Rockstar Games.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this while we've been playing. I'm completely of that mindset. Maybe Red Dead Online will be the same. We'll still be playing that 3 years down the line. Because I think, like, a lot of these games, the moment the last piece of DLC has hit, you know, or they announce the sequel, that old game's done and dusted, and there it's cast off, it's traded in, whatever. Mm. And yet this game is sustained. And not just within us, or clearly not just us that's playing it. If the game is still appearing in the charts and still having a quite a high trade-in value, it's not for the single player. That's the online that's keeping that alive. Mm-hmm. And you know, that interests me. I think, you know, there is a really interesting model there that I think other developers should take heed of, because it's clearly working for them. You don't have to do it to the same scale that Rockstar do, but pay attention to what they've done. And, you know, and because it matters. It does matter. As a gamer, I can't, you know, this isn't just throwaway DLC either. This is substantial stuff. This is stuff that other developers would charge 20 quid for.
And I think Rockstar seem to have this like uncanny ability to read the sort of narrative or the sort of meta of what's going on in the games. Certainly in GTA. So, for example, like the Cunning Stunts DLC had to have been in reaction to those people who were using the editor to make crazy courses. Mm. They knew that they needed to bring players together in order to actually sort of achieve something greater. Yeah. So they brought out the CEO missions and the biker. They're just really clever at sort of pushing and manipulating the players to do the things that they need to in the right way.
I think also they're not... You they'll be looking at the analytics and seeing how people are playing with this stuff and seeing all the data. I mean, some of which you can even see for yourself if you've got your stats screen, you know, but they can gather from that on where the weaknesses are. And I think over the course of 3 years, they've really honed their online understanding of what it is people want. And they've just molded the game to suit that. And so that's why, like, even now, we're playing it more than we've ever played it, because it's just so damn good at this point. And you kind of think, you know, like, yeah. And it, my hopes are, you know, through the roof for Red Dead Online if they're going to apply the same sort of theories and understanding to that, then, yeah. And but then by the, then post Red Dead Online, you expect, like, whenever they... you know, the next GTA game, that this stuff is going to be insane by that point.
I agree entirely, and I think it's one of the reasons why when they actually announced Red Dead, I was just like, oh, really? So soon? Because the quality of the content they're bringing out, and I could see myself playing this game. I mean, it's been 3 months every single day, and that's a lot of time, but I could see myself playing this a long time and still keeping up with the content, still feeling satisfied with the way that they're releasing the content in and of itself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I just checked, by the way, it's actually number 9 in the old format charts.
Nice.
As of right now, which is nuts when you think about it.
Yeah.
A 3-year-old game that's sort of sitting in the top 10 alongside the Battlefields and, you know, everything else. And it's like,
And I mean, like... what is the penetration rate for the install base of this game as well? I think it just goes to show. I don't know if it's pertinent to mention this. I do want to say, like, at the end of the day, like, rather than being a sort of forum to enter, or rather just share personal grievances about the way that some people may feel about the game, it's more like a call to arms. Like, if anybody does want to pick it up and play and learn how to play in a sort of positive way, and you have a PS4, by all means, like, we'll play every single night, and it's a real fun, emergent experience. So, you know, like, you should definitely do that.
I can vouch for that as well and say that it's a very welcoming group that, you know, that we've got going on here. New people who've come have always come away with positive experiences. And, you know, it is the game, but it does help to have a good group. And certainly if there's people listening to this who are kind of, you know, seeing it as, you know, something that they can't get into, come online and just see how we do it.
Yeah, and if you haven't played it for the past 3 years, just, you know, prepare to have your mind blown, because it's just not the same experience as it was then.
Right then. I think that'll do.